An Osho Talk.
Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt.
Number one.
A monk asked Bokuju, "What is the inner meaning of the teachings of Buddhism?" Bokuju said, "I won't answer." "Why not?" asked the monk. "Because," said Bokuju, "you think and think and then come and ask me." The monk further asked, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West?" Bokuju said, "Are we not teacher and learner? Why don't you come nearer?" The monk went nearer, and then Bokuju said, "When I call a man one from east of Setsu, one from west of Setsu is included. What's the meaning of that?" The monk then asked, "What is the essence of the meaning of Soke, which was where Ino lived?" Bokuju said, "When you meet a swordsman in the street, give him a sword. If it is not a poet, don't show him your poem." Once, Umon exclaimed, "Buddhism is just terrific. The tongue is so short." Then he said, "So long." He then said, "When we have finished cutting with a great axe, we rub our hands together." A monk asked Nanyin, "What is the great meaning of Buddhism?" Nanyin replied, "The origin of myriad diseases." The monk said, "Please cure me." Nanyin said, "The world doctor folds his arms." A monk asked Yaku-san, "Did the essence of Buddhism exist before Bodhidharma came?" "It did," said Yaku-san. "Then why did he come, if it already existed?" asked the monk. "He came," said Yaku-san, "just because it was here already."
Manisha. Zen is so strange. As far as intellectual understanding is concerned, it looks almost absent. It is one of the reasons why it has not grown. In a vast tree around the world, but has remained a small stream of only those who could see beyond the mind, who could feel, even though it is illogical, irrational. Once Picasso was asked, because he was sitting in his garden, with a beautiful rose bush. Many roses has blossomed on it. A friend, a guest, asked him, "What is the meaning of the roses?" Picasso said, "There is no meaning in anything at all. But there is immense significance even in the smallest piece of grass. You have to understand these two words, meaning and significance. In the dictionary, they have the same meaning, but in existence, in life, in truth, they are from different sources. Meaning is of the mind, and significance is of the no mind. Meaning is utilitarian. The bicycle has a meaning, but a rose flower, utterly meaningless. But does the bicycle have any significance? The rose flower has immense significance, a great grandeur. Just look at the flower and its beauty and its impossibility out of earth comes such a phenomenal, beautiful, fragrant rose for nobody in particular, but it spreads its fragrance to the whole universe. It is for anybody who is receptive. The concern of philosophy is meaning, and the concern of Zen is significance. The meaning has always to be rational. Significance has no such bondage. What meaning love is, it has immense beauty. It has great joy. It is a blessing. But don't ask the meaning. Since the days of Gautama Buddha, it has been asked again and again by the Buddhist monks, what is the meaning of Buddhism? Just by their question, they have missed. A wrong question cannot provoke a right answer. K. keeping this in your view, meditate on these small anecdotes. A monk asks Bokusu, what is the inner meaning of the teachings of Buddhism? Now nobody can say that his question is irrelevant. But in the world of Zen, it is absolutely irrelevant. Because in the first place, there is no teaching in Buddhism. In fact, there is no such thing as Buddhism. There is only the explosion of Buddhahood. It is not an ism like communism. It is not an ism like fascism. It is not a philosophy propounded by hundreds of philosophers around the world. Buddha is a unique phenomenon. He has no teaching, but only few hints. Few hints so that you can find yourself. It does not give any definitions, because to define is to limit. To define is to make a certain system of judgment. Those who come within the area are right, and those who not come within that area become automatically wrong. The Buddhahood is an experience without limits. It can happen to the young, to the old, to the white, to the black, to man, to woman. It can happen to anyone who is ready to take a jump from outside into his own self. But reaching into oneself, one does not find a certain meaning. One certainly finds a tremendous ecstasy. One is drowned in peace and silence. One feels as if thousands of flowers are showering over. It is majestic. It is a splendor. It is a miracle. It is a mystery. But it is not a meaning. Meaning is for the ordinary things of the world. Significance is for the inner. The inner is not a commodity. It has no price. It is not sellable. You cannot purchase it. Nobody can give it to you and nobody can take it away from you. Its status is unique in the whole universe. Everything goes on changing continuously, just like a cyclone. But your being remains the center of the cyclone without ever changing. Just the same. It is a search, a seeking into your own inwardness, but the question is not only asked by one mind. Do you hear the cuckoos have come again? Don't you see the significance of their innocent songs? There is no meaning. You cannot translate it. But it is coming from the very being of the cuckoos. Out of some great joy, out of some great abundance, they want to share it with the universe. A Buddha speaks also, but in the same way as the cuckoos are singing, in the same way as the roses share their fragrance to the air, as the bamboos chatter amongst themselves. They don't have words. But as the wind passes through, they say something without saying that we are also here. There is no Buddhism as a philosophy, but there is an experience of Buddha which is available to all. It is not a teaching, it is an experience. You cannot teach a blind man what is light, nor you can teach a deaf man what is music. To know the light, you need eyes, and to experience music, you need a receptivity of a musical ear. Bokuzu said, "I won't answer." Bokusu belongs to the great masters of Zen. Without as hesitating a moment, he said, "I want answer." In fact, he is answering by making this statement. He is saying it is not answerable. You can have it, but you cannot be explained, answered by somebody else. "I want answer" also means I am no more who is going to answer. It also means you are not receptive. What is the point of answering? And fundamentally, it is a live experience, not a question and answer. Philosophical discourse. The monk was surprised. Obviously, a great master known to thousands, worshipped by many, says he won't answer a simple question. "Why not?" asked the monk. "Because," said Bokusu, "you think and think and then come and ask me." He is saying, think about your question, think about my not answering, and perhaps you may have a certain insight, something may open through thinking on this, that a great master who is supposed to be enlightened is not willing to answer a simple question. There must be something wrong in the question, or there may be something in the experience of Buddhism that it cannot be brought into words. Or perhaps the man who experiences himself disappears into nothingness, into silence. He cannot answer. All answers are wrong. Just go and think and think and then come and ask me. The monk further asked, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West?" These are traditional questions in Zen. Bodhidharma founded Zen in China. He went from India 1400 years before. In Zen, it has been asked by the newcomers again and again, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? And particularly in this reference, when Bokosu said, I want answer. If a man of enlightenment cannot answer a simple question, what is the point of Bodhidharma? Traveling from far away India to China, the journey took 3 years. What is the point if it cannot be explained, if it cannot be taught? Then why Bodhidharma took such a trouble? Bokosu said, are we not teacher and learner? Why don't you come nearer? To be nearer to a master simply means drop your defenses. We are all having defenses. We are all afraid of being vulnerable. Rather than answering his question, he again made a different approach possible for him, that we are learners, teacher and learner. We both belong to the same dimension. I may be a little ahead of you. I am ready to share, but why don't you come a little nearer? Gautama Buddha used to say to newcomers, to the new inquirers, that just sit down by my side. When the right time comes, I will ask you, you can ask anything, but let the right time come. And sometimes it took years, a man will be sitting there in silence every day from morning till evening. In these days, Buddha's grace is falling over the master as a shower on the silent disciple. The master becomes almost a breeze continuously blowing all the dust that is gathered on the mirror of the disciple. The day when all thoughts have ceased, when the disciple is just a silence and nothing else, when there is no ripples in the lake of his consciousness, the right time, the right time has come. Only now something can be transferred which is not visible. In these silent moments, without saying anything, a flame passes to another flame. Have you ever thought about it? One candle is a flame. You bring another candle, unlit, close to the one which is a flame. There comes a moment when suddenly the flame jumps to the unlit flame. Asking the learner to come closer is asking to bring the unlit candle, which has every capacity, just the master's flame has to trigger the hidden splendor of the disciple. A certain closeness, a certain trust, a certain love, a certain intimacy, the student can remain far away from the teacher, but this is the difference between a student and a disciple. The student does not drop his barriers. He has come to collect some knowledge, to accumulate a little more concepts, he is a scholar. He is trying through his mind to know, but the mind can only borrow knowledge, it cannot know on its own. And any knowledge that is borrowed is no more knowledge. The moment you borrow it, it has lost its life, it is no more alive, it will not bring a transformation in your being. And the knowledge that does not bring a transformation in your being is not worth calling knowledge. But a teacher can teach the student. The distance does not matter. The master is not a teacher. The master is a source of a certain energy. You have to come closer to share in the energy in the fire of the Master, you have to enter and become a fire also. Suddenly you will discover that you have every capacity, every potentiality to become a Buddha. Why bother about Buddhism? When you can become a Buddha yourself, when you can open your eyes and see the light of the sun, what is the point of asking people with closed eyes what is light? And do you think anybody can explain to you with closed eyes what is light? There is no way. You have to open your eyes. When Bokusu said, don't be bothered about these things, what is the meaning of Buddhism? Why Bodhidharma came? It is his problem, not your problem. Why don't you come a little closer, a little nearer? In that closeness, your questions will melt away on their own. Because closer you come, the more your darkness disappears. Closer you come, the more your ego disappears. Closer you come, you start seeing your original face reflected in the Master's heart. It is a heart-to-heart silent message. The monk went nearer, and then Bokusu said, when I call a man, one from east of Setsu, one from west of Setsu is included. What is the meaning of that? The disciple may have come a little closer, but halfway, partially. But one can be closer only if one is total. East and west together. The disciple must have been holding something away and bringing something closer because the Master has asked. But no Master is satisfied with any partial involvement. Every master down the ages have asked to come with your fullness, with your totality, not leaving anything behind, not holding anything, just come with your totality and all your questions will disappear on their own accord. The monk then asks, what is the essence of the meaning of Sokhi? Which was where Inno lived. Inno was Bokusu's master. Now Bokusu has become master in his own right. The monk's answer is sarcastic. It's skeptical. When he says, what is the essence of the meaning of Sokhi? What you were doing at Sokhi, if you don't know what is the meaning of Buddhism, you don't know what was the cause of Bodhidharma coming to China. If you don't know anything, what have you been doing with your master Inno in Sokhi? Bokusu said, when you meet a swordsman in the street, give him a sword. If it is not a poet, don't show him your poem. He is saying that I am giving to you what you are capable of. I will not give you a poem if you are not a poet. I am not blind to your potentiality. If I see that you can become a great swordsman, I will present you with a sword. I will not bother you with any poetry. It seems the inquirer could not get any point. Zen is not like any other philosophical school of the world, where you can ask questions and you can be answered. Your questions are intellectual, the answers are intellectual, but neither the questioner knows exactly what he is asking. He is unconscious, but he can be forgiven. Even the teacher does not know what he is answering, because he is also unconscious. Simply transferring borrowed knowledge that he has gathered from other teachers. One blind man is trying to explain another blind man what is the meaning of light. Zen is not interested in philosophy at all. It is anti-philosophy. Once Umon exclaimed, Buddhism is just terrific. The tongue is so sharp. Then he added, so long. He then said, when we have finished cutting with a great axe, we rub our hands together. Looks like a puzzle, but it is not a puzzle. What he is saying is Buddhism is just terrific. It is an experience beyond words, beyond explanations, beyond human capacities. Our tongues are so sharp. They cannot utter the great experience. Our words are so small, they cannot contain the infinity, the eternity, the immortality of the experience. And the experience is so long. Our tongues are so sharp. Our hands are so small and the moon is so far away. He then said, when we have finished cutting with a great acts, we rub our hands together. First, let us try to finish cutting all weeds that are dividing us. Weeds are symbolized in Zen as our thoughts. Cut out all your thoughts. And then I don't have any thoughts and you don't have any thoughts. There is nothing to be said, but we can say, we can rub our hands in deep love, in gratitude. Something can be said with the hand which the words cannot utter. Have you ever thought about, if you touch people's hands, somebody's hands are cold. They don't want to share anything. Somebody's hands are very warm. They want to share their energy with you. Somebody's hands are almost dead, as if you are holding a dead branch of a tree. And somebody's hands are so alive, so radiant, as if they are dancing with joy. When the master and the disciple both have together finished with all the weeds, all that they can do is sit together holding each other's hands, sharing the pure energy of your love, of your intimacy, of your joy. They can dance together, they can sing together, or they can simply sit silently together, immersed into the ocean of silence, just as you are immersed here in a deep silence. The whole sky has descended over you with all its silence. Zen speaks a different language, hence it has been misunderstood. A monk asks none in, what is the great meaning of Buddhism? None in replied, the origin of myriad diseases. Only a very great master can say that. And only a very great disciple can understand that. The origin of millions of diseases. And this is said by a nun in a great master who worships every morning, every evening the statue of Buddha. But he is not saying that about Buddha, he is saying about Buddhism. Those who have made the experiences of Buddha and have turned them into great philosophical schools, they have created so many diseases. The monk said, please cure me. Nanin said, the world doctor folds his arms. Nobody can cure you. It is in your own capacity to hold on to the diseases or not to hold. Just drop them, because the diseases of the intellect are not the same as the diseases of the body. Your mind can be totally emptied of all thoughts for or against anything, of all prejudices. You can be in such a silent and innocent state, then there will be no disease at all. You have gained your wholeness and your health. You have gained your own being, which is never sick. And never ask anybody else to cure you, otherwise you will be creating a new bondage. Just try to understand something as a disease, and it is up to you to hold it on or not. The disease is not holding you. Every evening we are sitting in meditation. What we are doing? In our first part, we are throwing all our diseases. That's why I say nobody should sit silently. Otherwise, so many people are throwing their garbage, your mind may start collecting. Don't hear. Defeat everybody around you. Throw all your thoughts . The empty mind is the empty vote. You can go in the boat to the further shore. The mind full of thoughts is so heavy, so sick, so divided, that it cannot go anywhere. A monk asked Yaku-san, did the essence of Buddhism exist before Bodhidharma came? It did, said Yaku-san. Then why did he come? If it already existed, asked the monk. He came, said Yaku-san, just because it was here already. In these discourses, you will find the disciples, the inquirers are always rational, reasonable, logical. But the masters are never logical. You must have noticed in each dialogue, the master is absolutely absurd. Bodhidharma went to China according to the legend to bring the experience of Buddha and his fragrance to China. The questioner is perfectly logical in asking, did the essence of Buddhism exist before Bodhidharma came, but he does not understand what he is asking. Such is our unconsciousness. He is asking, did the essence was there, but essence is unmanifest. Unless a Bodhidharma hits, the essence will remain dormant. So his question looks absolutely logical. Did the essence of Buddhism exist before Bodhidharma came? And the master's answer does not look right when he says it did, because the inquirer immediately jumps, then why did he come? If the essence already existed, what was the need for Bodhidharma to come? But he does not understand the difference between essence and its manifestation. Yaku-san said he came just because the essence was already here. He did not go anywhere else, he came here seeing that the essence is there, just a little triggering. The laughter is in you, just a little tickling. Tickling cannot produce laughter. There is no causal relationship between tickling and laughter. But it happens. You are sitting very silently, absolutely serious, and somebody starts tickling you, and suddenly all your seriousness is gone. And first you laugh because you have been tickled, then you laugh that why you are laughing. The Zen poet Sikki has written, "Such silence is no tracing wings of mandarin ducks." The Zen poets have created a totally different category of poetry called haiku. It does not have many words, as all other languages have many words. And haiku is a very small piece, but very existential. You don't have to read it, you have to see it. Such silence, now don't listen to the word such silence, but feel it, experience it. Such silence is no tracing wings, such high flight that it leaves traces on the eternal snow of the mountains, of mandarin ducks. Seeing this miracle, you fall into a very deep, undisturbed peacefulness. The haiku is not a song to be sung. The haiku is a song to be experienced and seen. You have to visualize it. Another poet, here among the plum twigs, dry yet blooming, the oriole's silent song. Haiku cannot be translated in fact. These are only approximate words in Chinese and Japanese. There is no alphabet. Those are non-alphabetical languages. They have a totally different world. For example, here among the plum twigs, you have to use alphabet A, B, C, D. But in Chinese or Japanese or Korean, in all Eastern language, it is not words that are used. You will see the pictures of plum twigs. You will see the picture of hair. Everything is a picture. When you read a Zen poem, remember, it is pictorial. Here among the plum twigs, dry yet blooming, the oriole's silent song. Here it is possible in this silence to understand. This silence is not a word. You are drowned in it. It is showering on you like rainfall. And in this silence, suddenly a cuckoo starts singing. Our crickets start their own songs. It becomes a haiku. Poetry has been lived in haiku for the first time. In other languages, it has been written, but not lived. And the reason is Gautam Buddha's experience opening a new dimension, existential, particularly in this country where people were so much concerned with scripture, Vedas, continuous commentaries upon commentaries in the whole world. There has never been so many commentaries just on one book, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. There are 1,000 commentaries. Those are the famous ones. Others may have been lost. But 1,000 commentaries? As if people lived only words. In Zen, you have to drop your habit of bringing every experience into words. For example, the moment you see a beautiful rose, something inside you immediately translates it into alphabetical language. Something inside you says, "What a beautiful rose." You cannot remain silent. What a beautiful morning. What a beautiful sunset. Can't you remain without any words, just watching the sunset? Then you will become almost a part of it. Then it will not be something separate from you. Then it will be something very intimate and very close. To live poetry, to live music, are byproducts of Gautam Buddha's experience. Ikkyu wrote, "Buddhism is the saved part of the saucepan, the whiskers of the pebble, the sound that accompanies the bamboos in the picture." The bamboo is very much loved by the Zen poets. For its tremendous quality of being hollow. Out of this hollowness of the bamboo, a flute can be made. The bamboo will not sing, but the bamboo can allow any sound to pass through it. A man in meditation has to become just like a bamboo, hollow, so that the whole, the existence itself can sing its song through you. You become simply a part dancing, because the wind from the hole is passing through you. The energy of the hole has taken possession of you. You are possessed. You are no more, the whole is. This moment as the silence penetrates in you, you can understand the significance, because it is the same silence that Gautam Buddha experienced. It is the same silence that Chuang Tzu or Bodhidharma or Nansen . The taste of the silence is the same. Time changes, the world goes on changing, but the experience of silence, the joy of it, remains the same. That is the only thing you can rely upon, the only thing that never dies, the only thing that you can call your very being. Manisha has asked, why have you called Zen the diamond thunderbolt? Manisha, it is the diamond thunderbolt. It is a sudden experience. No preparation, no rehearsal, no discipline, no path. Suddenly you open your eyes as if a thunderbolt has hit you. And the sleep of millions of years is broken. In that awakening, you know the mystery of existence. The diamond is the hardest thing in the world. And to call a thunderbolt, diamond thunderbolt, is to say that suddenly it comes to you like a spear, passes through you, taking away all garbage, and leaving behind a pure space. Before we start our today's meditation, and remember, do it totally, because nobody knows about tomorrow. Never postpone for tomorrow. Don't say that let us wait and watch today, and tomorrow we will do. Tomorrow is absolutely uncertain. Only this moment is in your hands. Transform it into eternity or lose it. Before we enter in the world of meditation, in the world of Zen, I would like our poor bamboos to have few laughters. They wait every day. An English university professor who has never been to Ireland before steps out of the Central Railway Station in Dublin, seeing two Irishmen standing on the step, he decides to ask them for directions. "Excuse me, my good fellows," he says, "walking up to Paddy and Sean, do you think you could tell me the way to Trinity College?" Paddy and Sean stare at the Englishman without saying a word. He decides that perhaps they are foreigners and asks them in French. Paddy and Sean say nothing. The professor tries German, but the response is the same. So he tries Spanish, Greek, Portuguese, Swedish, Finnish, Italian, Russian, Eskimo, Hindi, Latin, Yiddish, and Sanskrit, but all to no avail. And so he gives up and walks off. Paddy turns to Sean and says, "Hey, did you hear that bloke? He spoke 14 different languages." "So what?" says Sean. "He still does not know where he is going." Paddy's wife Maureen has had it. She goes to see her attorney, Abraham Babelbrain, and tells him she wants a divorce. "Very well, Mrs. O'Grady," says Babelbrain, "what are your grounds?" "Grounds?" asked Maureen. "What do you mean, grounds?" "You know," says Babelbrain, "your reason. You have to have a reason for getting a divorce." "Reason?" says Maureen. "Really? What sort of reason?" "Well," says Babelbrain patiently, "for example, one reason would you be if your husband does not give you enough money?" "Wah!" snorts Maureen. "Give me money? I give him money." "Okay," says Babelbrain. "What about cruelty then? Does he beat you?" "Wah!" snorts Maureen again. "Beat me? I beat him." "Ah," says the advocate, So what about infidelity? Is he faithful to you in love? That is it, cries Maureen. That is how we get him. I know for a fact that he is not the father of our third child. Pope the Pollock is talking with a distressed young priest, Father Finger. Ah, beloved Pollock, says Father Finger, the more I listen to the confessions of all these good Catholic Christians, the more tragedy I see. And this tragedy has even infected those of us within the church. Really? Says the Pope. Like what, my son? Ah, Your Holiness, cries Father Finger, I fear that even good Christians are gamblers, drunkards, sex maniacs, and homosexuals, and not only that, continues the priest, but it is happening even within the very church itself. Just rubbish, exclaims Pope the Pollock. My good Christians, I know, never swear, gamble, drink, or rape inside the church. Baby, which do you prefer? Whispers Kulunski to his girlfriend, Claudia. Beautiful men are intelligent men. Neither, darling, says Claudia. You know, I love only you. Nivedana, give the first beat and everybody goes totally crazy. Be silent. Close your eyes. No movement. Just go within. Deeper, deeper. Be a diamond thunderbolt. Cut everything that is rubbish in you and reach to the clearance, the pure space of your being. This moment is blessed. Because only this moment can blossom into a flower in you. Because only this moment can bring you closer to existence, very heart beat. Don't be afraid. And don't hold to anything. Just take the jump. It is your own inner being. To make it deeper, Nivedanam, relax, let go, just be dead, leave the body out, mind out, and you go beyond. This is your very being. And your being is the being of the very universe. Relax into it. Rejoice into it. Feel the tremendous silence. In such silence, this moment becomes the very eternity. You can keep this experience of silence all around the day, just like an undercurrent, then your every act will reflect your Buddha nature. Essentially, you are a Buddha. In the seed, you are a Buddha. But in the seed, you are imprisoned. Let the seed be broken, settled into the soil, so that roses start growing within you. A man of consciousness becomes a garden of roses. This is the significance of Gautama Buddha, and this is the reason why Bodhidharma went to China. This is the reason why you are here. Searching, seeking that which you already have, but hidden deep, and you have never dared to go deep into it. The Master can only help to take the fear away and push you deeper into your own being. Nivedana, come back and sit silently for a few moments like a Buddha. In this insane world, you are very fortunate and blessed. That you are learning a language that mankind has completely forgotten. Can we celebrate the gathering of thousands of Buddhas here?